Well, today, once again, we get to speak with Dr. Colleen Swank, MD, Vice President Clinic at Sanford Health of Northwest Minnesota, or of Northern Minnesota. And Dr. Swank, thanks for taking time again today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate getting to have the conversation.
Well, we are into August now. We are watching parents prepare for school of some sort, and everybody's kind of on edge and wondering what's happening next. Let's just start where we're at right now in Beltrami County. If you could just give me kind of an overall picture of COVID-19 in Beltrami County, and maybe even, I don't know how much you can talk about the surrounding counties.
Sure. Well, the most recent numbers that I have seen are that Beltrami County is at 241 positives, and then Clearwater is at 14, Hubbard County is at 34, Cass is at 73, and then Lake of the Woods is still low at 4.
Okay. And when you say 241 positives in Beltrami County, we are referring to total number of positives since we started testing.
Correct. Yep, those aren't new positives. Now, here at Sanford, you know that we test, and certainly it could be people from all over the place that happen to get a test here. But what we're seeing most recently is about 5 to 7 new positives a day.
I know that we had taken a lot of care to flatten that curve, and that is obviously starting to ramp up here a little bit, and part of it was to set up for when things did get a little more active. Are we on a pace that we can maintain?
Yeah, and I'm hoping to see that we're maintaining this level or even going lower. And I think with the masking, we really should start seeing a difference in the next few weeks. You can imagine that, you know, before the masking, there could be some positives out there that weren't quite tested or weren't showing symptoms, and we're still contact tracing some of those. But I think that we were seeing that bigger surge in July. This is down a little bit from that. I would like to see it down lower, though.
Looking at Bemidji now and some of the comments on our daily reports, one of the questions people are wondering, are the people that are in the hospitalization situation that are having more serious circumstances, did they have underlying conditions, or is this all based on strictly COVID symptoms they're having?
So we know that people who end up being hospitalized or dying from COVID-19 tend to be older or have coexisting conditions. We are seeing that here as well. I think since things have started, we've had around 20 patients that have been hospitalized, and they have ranged in ages from age 24 up to somebody in their 90s. As far as comorbid conditions, we've had at least one patient who had no other underlying conditions. And then we've had people with obesity, hypertension, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, cardiac issues that have been hospitalized. But the reason that when we say that they're COVID-19 patients, they were hospitalized because of their symptoms with COVID-19.
COVID-19, like pneumonia or any other viral infection, can really, I don't know if enhance is the right word, but can really cause issues with conditions that people already have.
Exactly.
Okay. What number of the positives, and maybe you don't know, but what number of the positives are asymptomatic carriers?
So I don't have local percentages because we don't really track that part, but nationwide it looks like about 40% of people who have COVID-19 are asymptomatic.
Now, if you're asymptomatic, you probably wouldn't be tested. I'm assuming those that do get tested were people that maybe were in the network of somebody else who was tested and tested positive.
Yes, so that is true. In here at Sanford, we test people that either have exposure to somebody who is known positive, who have symptoms of COVID-19, and then in some cases because they're having a procedure or surgery here. And, yeah, I believe that the people that find out that they're positive but they're asymptomatic, it's because they were exposed.
There has been some discussion online. There's a lot of discussion online, but one of the things is positive tests versus positive patients. Your counts are based on patients and not tests, correct?
At the beginning of of all of this, we were testing a couple of people that had been positive, and then they got retested. I don't know if it was because they didn't believe that they were positive or how that was working. But since we know that if you are positive, that you can continue to carry some of that DNA of the virus in your nose and throat, even after you're no longer symptomatic and even after you're no longer going to be able to pass the virus on to somebody else, we don't test people that are positive again. But I think some of the numbers that you are seeing out there, either nationally or locally, could be the same person having multiple, one or two tests or two tests or more.
One of the things people are concerned about and they want to know, obviously, is, you know, are these Beltrami County people, are they Bemidji people, are they Black Duck people? Where are they from? Are they from out of the area? Do we have any way of knowing that?
So if the state puts them in a county, that's their local address that the person that's positive gives.
Okay.
But as far as, certainly, somebody could be from North Dakota and here using their cabin and be positive and then come to us and be tested, and then they would be listed as a North Dakota positive, not as a Minnesota positive.
I know one of the things that they're constantly doing is models of how the disease is progressing or the virus is progressing. What does the most recent model for our area look like?
So the modeling that we're still looking at is showing us peaking towards Labor Day. And what we're seeing right now does lead us to believe that that's fairly accurate. We'll probably be doing some more modeling here in the next couple of weeks. Your modeling tends to be more accurate the more data that you can feed into it. And so at the beginning, we were really not having that many positives. We weren't having hospital cases, and so it was really hard to feed much into the analyzer. Now that we've had more positive cases and more hospitalized cases and more of an idea of what's going on in the community, we are going to remodel and make sure that we're still on the right track.
Masks are a flashpoint, and I don't think anybody doesn't know that. One of the questions I noticed online, people wondering, those positive tests, were they wearing masks? Were they not wearing masks? Do we have any way of knowing that?
Boy, I don't know that. I don't think that when we help people to decide whether or not to get tested, that's one of the questions that we ask. We really don't want to put people in a feeling embarrassed or reluctant to call in because they are going to feel like they're being, if they weren't masking, that they're going to be chastised for that.
Most of the states have gone with at least some masking. That seems to be more or less the view by most medical professionals, yet it continues to be a controversy. At this point in time, what exactly do we know about masking?
So masking is a tool that we have in our toolbox. It is not perfect, but we believe, based on some of the anecdotal studies that we've been able to see, that it does help prevent the spreading of COVID-19, especially for those people that are asymptomatic. And so, obviously if you're sick, we're telling people to go home. The hard part is if you're asymptomatic or you're not going to show symptoms for 2 or 3 days, but yet you're contagious now. By wearing that mask, we know that when you talk, you tend to have some small spray that comes out of your mouth, or if you're yelling or you're singing or any of those things. And when you're within, a few feet of another person, that can get on their face and into their nasal passages, and that's where the virus replicates. And so by doing that, it decreases the likelihood. It doesn't make it zero, but it decreases it. And some of the ways that we anecdotally, again, this is just anecdotally that we feel that this is working is early on in March, I think, in Seattle, there was a choir concert of, I'm not going to have the numbers exactly right, but around 60 choir members, and there was one person who who was positive for COVID-19, didn't start having symptoms until that night after the choir practice, and I believe he infected 54 of those members. They were in close contact. They weren't masking because we weren't recommending masking at that time. Versus then there's been two situations where there were hairdressers, not in Minnesota, in a different state, and the two hairdressers tested positive for COVID, again, didn't have symptoms or didn't have symptoms until later. And they had seen, between the two of them, about 140 clients, but the clients were masked and the hairdressers themselves were masked. And testing of all those people led to no positives. And so, again, it's not the best scientific study, but anecdotally that looks like some evidence that masking can be helpful.
Most of the European countries and New Zealand and other countries that have had real success in slowing this down, they were pretty much masking up, if I'm correct on that.
Masking and or staying 6 feet apart. Or
one of the things I think is probably really frustrating, I think it is probably frustrating for everybody, but certainly for the medical professionals, you know, this is brand new. We don't know anything. It's kind of like, not quite the same, but it's kind of like you can't start working on trigonometry if you haven't had basic 1 + 1 = 2 math yet. And obviously there are some knowns on how viruses work, and there's great scientific minds there, but there's a lot of things we didn't know about this until like November, December, January, when it started.
Yeah, very true. And I think that's the frustrating thing for people, because some of the recommendations have changed over time as we've learned more. And so, you know, things that were recommended or not recommended, we flip-flopped. It feels like we flip-flopped on them, but it is just because we've learned more.
The other big word that's back and forth on social media and also on the news and is a political football is hydroxychloroquine, if I believe I said that right. So what is it? What is it for to begin with, and why is it so controversial?
So I think this is one of the things that sort of we flip-flopped on, and so that's the confusing part to people, I believe. So hydroxychloroquine, it's a medication that is used mostly for malaria. And way back in 2005, they looked either at hydroxychloroquine or its relative chloroquine in relationship to the SARS virus, which is another coronavirus. And they found in petri dishes, so not in people, but in petri dishes, that it looked like that medication was helpful. And so based on some of those older studies on a virus that was felt to be similar to the virus that causes COVID-19, when this first became rampant and we didn't have any tools in our toolbox, the theory was that hydroxychloroquine could work. And so we used hydroxychloroquine on hospitalized patients that really were sick. And that became kind of standard of care. As you know, the FDA approved it for this use and quickly approved it. And then as we had more, you know, and when I say we, I mean the nation, as we had more and more cases, then we were able to do studies and we were able to actually put patients randomly into ones that would get the hydroxychloroquine versus ones that wouldn't. And they really found that there was no difference in outcomes or course of disease, whether you got it or didn't get it. Then there became, you know, because it was, you know, touted, and, you know, even the President of the United States mentioned it, there were people that were using it, physicians that were using it in their own practices. So maybe on patients that weren't quite as so sick, they were in clinic practices, not in the hospital. And so then the feeling was is that these that this was working on patients that were not as sick or early in their course of disease. And there were lots of physicians out there that believe this to be true. Again, it's anecdotal, so it means that they feel like it's true, but there's no study. And so then because of that, more studies were done, not just in the United States, but in other countries as well. And those studies, again, just haven't shown that to be true. And I think that's the hard part because, you know, when you're a physician and you see, you give somebody something and you really feel like that did it for them, but if that is true, then the bigger studies that randomly put somebody in one group versus another, and you don't, you know, the researchers don't know who's getting the medication and who isn't, and then looking at their outcomes. And, you know, if the medication makes a difference, you really should be able to see that. And so the example that I gave to somebody earlier today was, you know, I could really believe that drinking orange juice helps patients with acne. And I can just believe that, and I can prescribe, you know, drinking orange juice to all of my patients with acne. And I can believe with all of my heart that my patients do well. They come back and see me, and their acne is better. I may or may not know what other things they're doing, but I can believe that it was the orange juice that's causing it. Well, if that's true, then we should be able to have a study that shows that. And so we should give one group of patients with acne orange juice and one group of patients with acne no orange juice, and we should be able to prove at the end of the study that the patients with acne with orange juice did better than the ones without. And with the hydroxychloroquine, we just are not seeing that.
I did read that, I think it's Tampa General or some Florida hospital is doing a study right now as more of a preventive for people who don't have it yet. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah, and again, I think it's a great idea to do these studies to see. And so I think what they're doing is if a person was exposed to COVID but not yet positive or not yet showing symptoms, that they're trying the hydroxychloroquine and seeing if they maybe don't then become positive.
The other frustrating part about studies and, you know, trying to come up with vaccines or whatever it is, those usually can't be figured out in a weekend.
It does take time, and that's the hard part, is you don't want to jump to conclusions. And so you might have some initial data that looks great, but you have to give it some time and make sure that the conclusions are correct.
Well, the next big thing in the United States and certainly in Minnesota and Bemidji will be school starting. And I know that you mentioned that there's no official position taken by Sanford, but what are your thoughts about school in this upcoming year?
Well, we're just really, Sanford and as an organization, we're really trying to help schools come up with the plans that work for their district. And we're really trying to follow the CDC guidance on opening schools. And so trying to work through with them whether masking is the right thing or not, how to mask, you know, children correctly and make sure that it's safe. Making sure that classrooms are positioned so that you can have that physical distancing, making sure that the kids are all faced the same direction towards the front of the class rather than towards each other, because that can decrease the spread. You know, trying to help them figure out, you know, in the high schools when they're changing classes, how to avoid that crowding. You know, all of those things to try and figure out what's the safest way to reopen.
It's going to reopen one way or another right after Labor Day. Obviously, there's a lot of concern, but the key thing is everybody's got to stay on top of it and everybody's got to follow the protocols. And that's what we have to do every day when we go to work or go shopping or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that with the schools, a lot of it is just going to be having a plan. And so if you plan for those contingencies, then when they happen, there isn't the confusion. And so what's the plan if a child in a classroom ends up, or a teacher ends up being positive? We're helping the school district walk through kind of some of those things so that there isn't that confusion and feeling like there's miscommunication.
Well, it never hurts to be reminded of the things we should be doing every day. You know, I think we're all putting on our masks now, or most of us are anyway. What are the other things that maybe we forget about and we need to be reminded of?
I think the hand washing is still really important. You know, wearing masks help keep us from touching our faces so much, but yet when we have the masks on, we still kind of adjust, or you pull it down and itch your nose or whatever. And so washing your hands after that, so just that kind of hand hygiene is important. Trying to stay, you know, 6 feet away from people as much as possible, especially if both people aren't masked, I think that's important. Making sure that you're in your own homes, especially if you have somebody who's sick, cleaning off the doorknobs and the surfaces. Staying home if you're sick, and so making sure that you're symptoms that you think are your normal fall allergies are really your fall allergies. Not sure what to do, calling your provider and making sure that you don't need to be seen or have a test, I think is important. Don't forget to continue your normal care. And so we know nationally that immunization rates are down. And so making sure that you're still coming in and getting your immunizations, going to your dental appointments, getting mammograms and colonoscopies.
Great conversation today. Some really good information that you passed on. I truly appreciate it. Is there any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
A lot of the masking and a lot of the beliefs have turned a little divisive. And, you know, I've heard of cases of 17-year-old workers at Walmart, not locally, but being spit at by people because they were asked to put a mask on. I think some of that is just heartbreaking to me. And so just be kind to one another. This is hard for everyone.
Very good advice. Dr. Colleen Swank is the Vice President Clinic at Sanford Health of Northern Minnesota. Spends a lot of time with us, getting us updated with what's going on with COVID-19. We really appreciate you always willing to take time and get us updated with the latest. Again, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I appreciate the conversation.